Welcome to the Inclusion First podcast, where we amplify the stories of regular people practicing anti-racism in their everyday lives. Every single one of us has the ability to create real and meaningful change right where we are. I'm your host, Carrie Sawyer, and I've got the stories to prove it. I can't wait to introduce you to these people, these change leaders, people who saw a need and decided to take action. To me, this is so inspiring, showing the powerful idea of everyday activism. I hope that you take away at least some small inspiration and use it to act and create more good in your world too. Let's get started, y'all.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kaseva, your honorary First Inclusion Project podcast host. Welcome back to another episode of the First Inclusion Project podcast, College Takeover, All Things Inclusive Edition, where I'm having thoughtful conversations with some amazing college pals with the hopes of inspiring you all to engage in conversations and actions that will create a more inclusive world. Today, we're talking about the Asian community and mental health with my guest, Dershan Shaw.
Hello. So nice to be with you today.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Of course. I'm excited.
So, Dersh, what's your major?
Thanks for asking. My major is global studies. A lot of people are confused when I tell them that. So I basically tell them it's a poor man's version of international relations. So, that's what I'm currently studying right now. And I'm going to be a sophomore this upcoming fall semester.
And what do you hope to do with your studies?
Well, you know, it's funny. A lot of family members have the same question for me when I see them. I went into college having the idea that I wanted to go to law school. But, you know, I mean, college is the place to really explore different career paths. And I'm starting to see that law may not be for me. So I've always had the vision of wanting to get into diplomacy, maybe working for the State Department in the future, something like that, you know, becoming a bureaucrat. So we'll see what happens. I have plenty of time.
good things in the future. You do have plenty of time to think about your future. Well, thank you everyone for listening to this episode. We're going to just dive right on in. So a study financed by the National Institute of Mental Health concluded that Asians are less likely than other ethnic groups to seek mental health services. Why do you think this is?
You know, it's an interesting question. First off, I can only really speak on the experience that I've personally had, and that's particularly coming from an Indian family. And, you know, the Asian community itself is so spread out and so diverse, but I do, from my own personal conversations and friendships, I see a lot of similarities, whether you're South Asian or you're East Asian or Southwest or Southeast. But me personally, I think the reason that Asians are less likely is just because, like a lot of other cultures, there's such a stigma attached to having struggles with mental health and wanting to seek out those services. And when there's a stigma attached to something, when there's a certain connotation, when you use words like depression, anxiety, and you're not even comfortable speaking to the closest people to in your life, like your family, your parents, I mean, of course you're not going to seek out those mental health services because that action in itself hasn't been normalized.
So in your opinion, do you think that the Indian community is open to conversations about mental health? Is mental health something that's taboo in the Indian community?
It's absolutely taboo, 100%. From my own experience, just, you know, being the son of a woman who immigrated here when she was 16 and was exposed to American culture and assimilated to this country, she still struggles with acknowledging her own mental health issues. And, you know, that influences how much children might be able to combat those issues as well. So I definitely think there is there are people in the Indian community who are open to having those conversations. I think it's going to happen more so from the children of these immigrant parents, more so than the parents themselves, just because they're exposed to a different environment. They're exposed to people and friendships and relationships that may normalize and encourage reaching out, seeking those mental health services, and being vulnerable about those things.
Right. And, you know, I'm also the child of immigrants and from a culture where mental health is very much still a taboo. And how do you feel about the way that parents and other family members handle children possibly having mental health issues? Is it something that's meant to be, you know, on the low? Is it then a point where, oh my gosh, like, this is something that is real and this person needs to seek treatment, or just kind of swept under the rug?
I think families and parents' responses or how they handle their children's mental health issues can be so varied. But in my experience, I think so many of the times, especially in the Asian community, it's swept under the rug, unfortunately. I don't think this is, from the parents' perspective, comes from a place of malice. I don't think that they wish to minimize their children's experiences or cause them trauma. I genuinely feel like it, and this may not be the majority of opinion, it comes from a place of love. It comes from a place of strength. It's just translated and expressed in such a terrible way. It's like, good idea, poor execution, you know? And the reason I say that is because of my own personal experience. I mean, when as I've gotten older, I've had so many conversations with my mom about mental health and about the way she approached it with me as I grew up. And, you know, she says it directly, and I can just pick up on it indirectly. Whenever you are faced with moving halfway across the world to an entirely new country, new culture, new language, new experiences, there's a certain type of toughness and callousness that you have to develop just to get through the situation, you know? Yep. So when I go up to my mom and I say, hey, I'm depressed, I'm feeling this depression coming on to me, can I go talk to somebody? It's easy for them to come from their position of going through such a painful, resilient experience and saying, no, everything's fine. You know, you're living in this country, you're going to school, you're doing these things. Why should you possibly be anxious? Why should you possibly be depressed? So I think there's just a really big gap between these generations that I hopefully, you know, whether it's way too optimistic or not, I think that can be bridged over time with effort.
That's just so wild to me, because that is something that I relate to, and I'm pretty sure the children of immigrants. I think that, honestly, if we were to have these conversations, had we have not been in this country, I feel like it would go better, just because, like you're saying, it's like they got here and mental health was exposed to them, and it was like, oh, yes, but, you know, we went through all of these struggles and challenges and we're fine. So for our kids who have access to all of these privileges and resources, for us to be like, I'm not really happy, and I don't know why. It's like, for them, it's hard for them to understand. But it's coming from a place of love, just like you said, just the wrong execution. They have the right idea.
Absolutely.
Just the wrong execution. And so with that, what do you think is the best way for people our age or younger to have these conversations with our parents? How do we initiate them?
I have to be careful with this answer, or at least my personal belief on this, just because some people's parents are so different, you know? Yeah. I'll be honest with you, me personally, it took me many months of pushing and let's just say impassioned exchanges, if you will, with my mom to even to have her allow me go seek therapists, and this was when I was in high school. So I think it's so different for each family, just because, you know, I've talked to friends, I've talked to people who've told me that their family shuns them, or their family will, you know, straight up lecture them or scold them if they suggest wanting to, you know, reach out for certain services or even try to reach out to somebody, whether it's a professional or not, to talk about their problems, you know. But I think slow and steady wins the race. I think it's all about just trying to open that door and taking those small steps, because if you go all in, there's bound to be some sort of defensive reaction, you know. I think it's about exposure little by little and just opening up the possibility for being able to have open, honest dialogues about mental health issues within these families. Because whether or not you express it, everybody is going through these things. You yourself, whether you are a child of immigrants or not, or the parents themselves, you know, I mean, they are going through these struggles with their mental health just as much as you are. They probably are just struggling with accepting it or having the self-awareness to acknowledge it. And that's where that kind of vulnerability starts with, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think it also does take a level of patience and understanding on our end, because just as much as we're trying to figure our own things out, some of these things can be triggering for our family and their parents, because our and our parents, because they, when we're telling them or exposing them to certain things, they might be thinking back on their own life and unpacking certain things and certain feelings. And I'm not too sure about Indian culture, but in my culture, you don't really question what your parents did or how you were raised. You can't really say that what happened to you or whatever the case was the wrong way. However you grew up was the right way. And if you even like criticize your parents' parenting, it's almost disrespectful. And there's such a huge thing with respecting your elders that we really have to have some patience and understanding of where they're also coming from with that, because sometimes it's like you're going through the journey together, just not necessarily in the same way, because one side obviously is not as receptive as, you know, those of us doing the exposing and the teaching, but it's just like a teaching moment and learning time for everyone that's involved. And with that is trial and error. And like you said, some people's situations, it varies, because only you will truly know your family and the extent of their words. Some of us are able to kind of give some pushback because we really do know that the love really is there and they just don't get it. But it's definitely up to, I think, the individual's discretion and you know what that looks like. But what do you hope to see within your community in in the future? Like, what do you hope for?
You know, I can hope all I want for what I want to see happen in my community, but as cliche as it might sound, it really starts with each person involved in that community. Like, I for some reason I've always known I wanted to be a dad at some point in my life. I want to have kids, right? And I always think about how can I, when I'm put in that position, when I'm responsible for a child, a person who is going to grow into a fully formed human being who is on their own, right? How can I raise them up to be somebody who is comfortable with vulnerability, who is not afraid to reach out, who is not afraid to acknowledge and confront those issues they're dealing with before they snowball into something larger and something paralyzing, you know? So I think it's just, you know, I think I hope to see more communicate, more honest, vulnerable communication with the older generation. But at the end of the day, generations will often be stuck in their ways, I really feel like. So it's about this newer generation taking the lead, learning from the examples and the mistakes, and also the successes of their parents, and translating that into a new way of like bringing up their kids and communicating and having these connections with you know, their own friends and families. So, yeah.
You know, it's interesting that you brought that up, because the issue that some people still might have is that, okay, we might grow up and, you know, try to be the change makers and break these cycles, but our parents are going to be their grandparents and their parents are going to be their great grandparents. So if that level of stubbornness and ignorance is still there, how are we supposed to combat that without causing more family conflict?
No, I mean, you bring up a good point. I think it's a tricky line to kind of, you know, walk across, and to kind of, you know, it's difficult to balance those two things, because I mean, I've struggled with the same thing. I've struggled this more this past year, you know, adjusting to college life, coming, you know, moving to a different state. I've tried working on my relationship with my mom and discussing mental health, but you know, my grandparents are very much set in their ways. I remember one time I called my grandma and she told me that I looked depressed and I needed to stop being depressed, because that's something, and I quote, only white people do, and we're strong because we're Indian, and I can't believe, unquote, I can't believe she said that. But I mean, that's really,
I'm not surprised either.
I'm not surprised.
My grandma has said stuff like that too. So,
you know, it's probably shocking to some. Like, I told some of my white friends, and they're like, "Interesting comment." But like, you know, it's it really speaks to the kind of generational differences at play. So I agree. I think it's definitely tricky, because the older generation and the older set of parents, grandparents will have somewhat of an influence. It's just, this might sound defeatist, but at a certain point, and I think this goes back to what we were talking about, how, you know, people handle their families and their parents. But if you're not making progress, you just got to direct your energy towards another way of improving things, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's kind of, what is that saying? Something about, you know, you don't talk about politics, religion.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
At the table. It's one of those things where it's a losing battle, to the point where you're going to drive yourself crazy, especially if somebody is telling you that they're not going to shift the other way. Because me trying to have conversations with my grandma about mental health, it doesn't go right, because, you know, she'll tell me stories about certain things and I'm like, yeah, that was not okay. Like, that is not something that you should take pride in, and that it brought you strength, because in other ways it didn't help you out. And so sometimes, you know, you just have to keep the love for what it is and just avoid those conversations. That I don't think that also means that you're not trying, or you're not advocating, you know, for change, or that you've given up. You just have to reroute it again to your immediate family or the steps that you're going to do. Because a lot of kids as well, when we move out of state, when we go off to school, no one is stopping us at that point, right, from seeking mental health aid in whichever way form that we wish to seek it. But there is a little bit of that guilt sometimes that is behind that. So what do you say to the college kids who get to college and they're like, okay, finally I'm free at last, I feel like I can get this help that I need, but they're still, you know, kind of standing with their feet over the edge, not wanting to jump?
Jump. You know, you're gonna jump, and you're gonna have that pit in your stomach, and it's, you know, you're gonna feel terrible. You know, it's like getting on a roller coaster and getting through that fall, but you just gotta take the leap. And I know that's easier said than done, but what I've learned in my short 19 years of life thus far is that there's certain moments where you want to overthink it because you're trying to convince yourself not to take action, and that's it. There's a lot of people are asking, or, you know, people
you have to say that one more time for the people. Yeah. Like, you need to say that one more time.
Yeah, exactly. It's when you're overthinking, it's your own mind putting its own op it's putting it's your mind creating an obstacle to action. That's all it is. And so many people will, and I've learned this from my own struggles, and I can go into depth about them, but so many times in my life, there's moments where I feel stuck or I'm at a standstill and I'm waiting for this magic secret or solution or this sudden rush of motivation to hit me. But the answer is to just effing jump. That's it. You just got to take that leap, because you don't want days, months, weeks, years to pass by and you're stuck in the same spot. You know what I mean? And I think that applies to mental health in itself, because you, no one's going to save you except yourself. That's what I've learned. And that's not my own. That's not my own saying. I've heard that from other people, but it's something I wholeheartedly agree in. No one's going to save you except yourself. And if you're not willing to participate and to be, to help in your own rescue when it comes especially to mental health, then you can't expect anybody else to do it. I mean, that's the point of resources in itself.
Right.
You know, a resource isn't an end-all be-all solution. It is an aid. It is a support to what you're doing for yourself. And that takes me to another part of resources, which is resources can look different from other people. It doesn't have to look like just a hotline that you call or a therapist that you get connected with. I found in my own journey with mental health that physical activity, running, lifting, meditation, reading, hobbies. Like, I started playing guitar, and, you know, at first it was more of a creative endeavor, but the reason I find myself sticking with it is because it helps me mentally when I'm going through it, you know? So I think it's recognizing that mental health resources don't have to come in a certain shape or form. It can manifest itself in so many different ways. And you have to be willing to keep an open mind and accept that your own journey isn't going to look the same as someone else's, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So you really just have to be patient and jump. Just do it.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And if there's anything else that you would like to let the listeners know, what is like your last piece of advice? What are your words of wisdom?
Dershin's words of wisdom. I've struggled throughout my life with mental health. I mean, just like anybody else, I've struggled. Everybody has their own crap that they're navigating throughout daily life. Everybody has their baggage to their own varying degrees, you know? And I think if I have to leave the listeners, if you're out there, if you're listening right now, if I have to leave them with anything, it's that the journey never ends. The journey never stops. And, you know, I don't mean that in like a scary kind of way or in a pressuring way, but more so I think it's important to always keep up that self-awareness and to always be mindful of where you are mentally before you go into autopilot. Because I found in my own life, when you go into that autopilot, when you're just quote unquote going with the flow, that's whenever problems will kind of creep up and catch you, you know? And I found that whenever I'm aware of the time that I am, you know, using and I'm being intentional and mindful of, you know, the actions of my everyday life, I'm doing better in terms of my mental health situation and journey. So yeah, that's what I'd leave people with, is just stay mindful, you know, don't be afraid to take that time for, you know, self-care is a buzzword. And I don't mean self-care as in, you know, I'm going to take a bath today, you know, and I'm going to drink some wine and,
right.
You know, that's all nice. I'm not saying don't do that. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but self-care is, you know, self-care doesn't have to look that glamorous. Self-care could be you're having a crap day. You motivate yourself to get out of bed and you go on a run because, you know, you just feel bad about yourself or your body, or it looks like you're frustrated or upset over this thing that happened in your life. So you're going to sit down for a second and you're going to write it out, or you're going to type out your feelings. it doesn't have to be so glamorous, so picture perfect. It can be more practical. And I feel like if people start to, including myself, all this advice applies to myself because I'm not perfect, but I feel like if people start approaching mental health in more of a practical sense, then a lot more progress can be made for everybody. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dersh.
Thanks for having me on, of course.
For just everything that you have to say. I'm sure that it's going to resonate with so many of our listeners. So if you're hearing this message right now, it means that you've listened to the entire episode. And for that, I would like to thank you all so much for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this episode just as much as we did. So until next time, keep conversing, keep engaging, and never stop learning.
Thank you for listening to the Inclusion First podcast. We are always collecting and answering your most important questions on anti-racism. So if there's something on your mind, head on over to theinclusionfirstproject.org and click on Ask a Question. We'd love for you to give us your like, your share, your follow, and especially your review, wherever you find us. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will talk to you next time.